members this morning. Thank you for coming in. We are going to move the three education bills that we heard last week to the K-12 division. Senator Hoffman and I are going to be at the table and appreciate you coming in to help us move these education bills. So.
Welcome to the committee. Senator Hoffman, you're going to go first.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for allowing us back in front of you again. And yes, as you know, last week we talked about the need for equalization and specifically the bills that you heard from us and that we're going to move forward, hopefully move forward today, get that issue of equalization. There are over 100 senators and legislators that now come from property-poor districts that represent those districts right here in our House and Senate. And I think it's important that as we're looking at what our state constitution says about education, uniform, and standard, this just moves us forward. And I'm happy to be part of this process, and I'm thankful that Senator Scoy has had some history and knowledge in this as well. And so with that, members, thanks for being here. Senator Scoy.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And with that, I would move that Senate File 569 be recommended to pass and referred to the K-12 budget.
On that motion, is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Senjum.
Mr. Chair, and either Senator Scoy or Hoffman, just in a sentence or two, what would be the effect of this bill? Evening up, if you will, maybe I can paraphrase, evening up the per pupil allocation between poor districts and more wealthy districts. Is that it?
Yep, it was the
A2. Mr. Chair, Senator Senjum, what Senator Hoffman and I are trying to do is a couple of things. First of all, through the equalization, we're trying to reduce the tax burden all across the state, doing property tax relief. But while we do that property tax relief, we're trying to equalize the burden as we have across the state. So if you have a $100,000 home in rural Minnesota, you know, say Bagley or Burnsville, the burden for school funding on that home is comparable no matter where you are in the
okay.
state. That does a couple of things. It does help our school districts as they are trying to pass these voter-approved referendums, because if you're in a lower property area, the state will help and your rate will go higher than any comparable rate in the state. So we're trying to address the inequities in property tax burden. And then in the bill that I have, we get to it, we're also trying to address the fact that there are 40-some school districts that do not have a voter-approved and cannot pass a voter-approved referendum. I don't think Senator Hoffman deals with that in your bill, do you?
No, Mr. Chair and Senator Scoy, I do not. There's an issue of four of the levies. We try to equalize the transportation, and I think it's reflexive. What there's a common theme here, Mr. Chair, if I can. When you look at a town like Lakeville or a school district like Lakeville, you know, they're in order for them to get to the $900 per, let's take a $900 per pupil unit to raise that revenue, and they have a $100,000 house, they have to raise $192 in taxes just to get to that $900 of funding for a student. If that $100,000 house is, say, Orono, they only raise $70 worth of property taxes. So there's a disproportionate amount of leverage there, and this really gets to that equalization side of it. So,
thank you very much.
And Senator Hoffman, I'm told we did amend this bill in committee the other day. So your motion, the motion is that Senate File 569, as amended, be recommended, passed, and referred to the Committee on K-12 Finance. Senator Thompson was,
Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Did I understand then correctly that if this bill passes, then if certain school districts pass levies, there would be money coming from the state? So in essence, then people in a remote location would be subsidizing levies passed in a different location. Is that right, or did I misunderstand that?
Senator Scoy.
Oh, Mr. Chair and Senator Thompson, some of this discussion would be more appropriate on the amendment that's going to be offered shortly, but what the state currently has and has had in place since the Minnesota Miracle is an equalizing factor so that a community will levy up to what they can bear for property taxes, and then anything over that, the state would pay. And that's a long-standing tradition in Minnesota of equalizing tax burden. That formula has not been adjusted since 1992. So what has happened is as property values has increased, the amount of money that the state has been supporting has, as a percentage, dropped. The amount that the local property taxpayer has paid has increased significantly. And so this effort, this initiative does two things. It's an overall property tax reduction across the state, and it also equalizes that tax burden for areas that have less ability to raise revenue on their own.
Mr. Chair, thank you. So it essentially makes that shifting of money from one area to another a little bit more dramatic.
Mr. Chair, Senator Thompson, it would make the shift more comparable to what it was in 1990s, and it could be construed as being an increase.
Thank you.
Senator Thompson. Senator Chamberlain.
Yeah, thank you. I'm sorry I was a little bit late, but I just want to make sure the difference here, Senator Scoy and Senator Hoffman, is that, Senator Scoy, I believe our bill just had we had a fixed number, and Senator Hoffman, yours is puts a percentage in there so we don't get stuck where we have been. Again, is that correct? Am I wrong? Okay. Thank you.
Senator Hoffman.
Mr. Chair, yeah, that piece is correct.
Thank you.
Further discussion on the motion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, we're going to start with Senate File 177, and I have the A4 amendment.
I think that's in the packets already.
Yeah, the A4 is passed out. And if I could offer the A4 amendment and then discuss that, because that really is what we're going to be working off of, the K-12 committee is going to be working off of. I would offer the A4 amendment.
And Senator Scoy, this is your first committee, so this is a, or no?
No.
This is not. Okay, so Senator Scoy moves the A4 amendment. Discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, what this amendment is doing is taking the Senate File 576 revenue concept, the levy concept, and moving it into Senate File 7177, which was the equalizing. So what we've been doing is trying to have a policy discussion in this committee about property tax relief, as I mentioned, but also about this concept of equalizing taxes. These two bills, Senate File 177 and 576, really work together, so we decided to add them together. We have not done a lot of looking at the distribution of the impact of this. I think we're going to let the K-12 committee deal with the education funding component of that. But I really appreciate that we've had this opportunity to have this education discussion about levies for schools in this committee. What this amendment does is it makes changes to the original bill in these ways. The $300 levy that is called the Education Advancement Revenue Levy is moved from net tax capacity to market value. So it takes the impact of the rates that different properties pay out of the equation. It's just based on market value. So that is a fairly significant change in the bill, but I think as you review property tax policy, most experts recommend that property taxes be levied on market value, and so we have made the move toward that direction. The other thing that this bill does, just so everybody's clear, that the $300 levy is the state is giving the authority to the school board to pass this levy. This is not a voter-approved levy. This is a school board-approved levy. And it removes $300 of the voter-approved levy. So it's a replacement. That's the recommendation that the governor's education task force came up with. And so we're tracking along with that. Then the final component of this bill is, as we have talked about, the doubling of the equalizing formula. The formula, as I said, hasn't been adjusted since 1992. And the state had more than doubled. And so this is an effort to catch up with some of those increases in property values across the state. And I would stand for questions on the
report. Senator Scoy, so if a district has $700 in referendum levy authority, you would take $300 from that and replace it with this $300 in effect?
Mr. Chair, what would happen if a school district had a $700 voter referendum after this, if this is to become law, they would then have $400 of voter approved authority and $300 of school board approved authority. The emphasis behind that, and I'm not necessarily so committed to taking away the voters out of the process. The problem is that we have 47 school districts because of the makeup of their property values and their communities, they just can't pass a voter referendum. And so the education funding in those school districts is really quite significantly less than other school districts. The state average is, I think it's $1,030 now. Referendum. You're a school district at zero. It's a significant funding differential per pupil. So we're trying to address just a small part of that. And that's the reason for going to the school board approved. Originally, we thought that equalizing would be the most important part, but I've come to think that we really need to address those 40-some schools. The other thing that happens in those schools when they have much less money per pupil is they have moved, many of them have moved to a 4-day week. And for me, and for my thoughts on the importance of education, that really is not the best direction to be going. And if we can go back and address some of that through this effort, I think it would be helpful.
Senator Bach.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Scoy, would it be fair to say that this moves us back in the direction of school levies prior to the 2001 tax reforms, relative to school levies?
Mr. Chair and Senator Bach, yes, in a small way, the general education levy that was in place prior to the Ventura administration was a much larger dollar component of education funding, but this is a small effort to move back to that. You know, many of the education funding folks have talked for years about the importance of having a state authority for a levy that the school boards approve. It's a mechanism that they think is a good lever for leveling out the school funding, taking out some of the economic variability that we have. And so I think for a number of reasons, it's a pretty good effort.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Bach.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Scoy, Senator Cohen and I are just in the beginning stages of talking about committee targets and something that we will have to publicly announce, I hope, before the Easter break. It would be helpful, I think, if you had a conversation with Senator Wieger about the equalization is going to require some general fund cost. As to who is going to carry that in their bill. If Senator Wieger is going to carry it as part of his general fund target, or if you're going to carry it in the tax bill.
Mr. Chair and Senator Bach, I met with Senator Wieger and a number of his committee members yesterday. We had that very discussion. It's the third time I've met with Senator Wieger and his staff. And what we were talking about is the property tax relief component that the tax committee would carry on our target. the education funding component, which would be new dollars to schools, they would be able to carry that in their target.
Further discussion on the A4 amendment? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. On the bill as amended. Discussion. Senator Scoy.
If there's no further discussion, I would move that Senate File 177 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the K-12 budget.
Fine. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have, Senator Scoy, one question. I wasn't here in 2001, but I do believe that part of this reform, kind of the pre-Ventura reform that Senator Bach had mentioned, also included several moving parts, and one of those, I believe, was the isn't that when the business property tax came into play? And I see you nodding. So my question is, does your bill then also contain removal of the business property tax? In other words, should we not address both of those levers instead of just one?
Here's Clay.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Nelson, there was a lot of moving parts in 2001, and if I could unring that bell, I would. There was around $1 billion spent on school levies and school levy buyback and other components during that time period. Part of the compromise for the statewide business tax was that those businesses were being removed from this voter-approved part of the school levy components. They received significant rate compression, rate reduction. Because of the rate reduction and other issues, they then were being asked to pay to support education through the statewide business property tax. At the same time, the cabin owners, the seasonal rec folks, were also removed from the voter-approved referendum and added to the statewide business property tax. So there was a fair amount of stuff going on there. And at first, this money was dedicated to education in the general fund. I think that was removed a year and a half or so later. But it really wouldn't have mattered, because as long as the amount of money from the dedication is less than the general fund commitment to education, it's just all fungible, you know. But if we're going to attack the issue of the statewide business property tax, we would have to revisit the rate compression that those folks have had. And we also are going to have to revisit at some point the differential between the automatic inflation adjuster that they have in place on the statewide business property tax and what their taxes would actually be if we were taxing the value increases that they have occurred over the last decade. So there's a lot going on there. I am not making any changes to business taxes at all in this bill. The changeover from the voter approved, which is on market value, to this mechanism, which is on market value, makes no changes to them. The one area that they do see benefits is from the equalizing. The equalizing factor benefits all properties in the school districts, homes, businesses, ag land, all would receive benefit from the equalizing. It's a general reduction local area.
Senator Bach.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Scoy, would it be fair to say that in a district that had more than $300 in a voter-approved levy, that if your bill was enacted, in most of those districts, if they received the equalization aid, the property taxes on commercial industrial property actually would go down under your bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair and Senator Bach. For any school district that has more than $300 of voter-approved, this is a property tax relief bill. It's no new money for schools. It's just the different mechanism. The equalizing is where the property tax relief comes from. So, and that would vary depending upon your market values. And so the move away from net tax capacity brings in the classification rates. So, you know, homes are at 1.0 and businesses are at 2.0 and at other rates. So we're taking that out now. If I'd have left it on net tax capacity, then the businesses would have had some concern because it would have been and could have been construed as a increase to them, but I've moved away from that, so that is not no longer. But for school districts that have less than $300 of voter-approved referendum, there potentially could be some property tax increases in those districts if the school board, by resolution, puts this levy onto the taxpayer. We're giving them the authority to do that by school board.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, Senator Skoy, can you repeat what you just said? The school board can increase the levy and there's no vote on it.
Mr. Chair and Senator Ortman, the school board has a number of different levies that it just authorizes. The school board, the state has given them the authority. The listing is in here somewhere. Well, I'm not going to pull it out that quick, but there are a number of, I think, there are a number of levies that are just school board approved. There's one levy that is voter approved, and that's the one that used to be called the excess levy and kind of morphed into the operating levy as the state did not fulfill our commitment to fund schools. It has brought a lot of disparity to education funding across the state. Some school districts have $2,600 of voter approved referendum. Some have zero. This is a very, very modest effort to try to reduce some of that inequity. The state average is 1,030.
Mr. Chair,
Chair,
you may be heading in the right direction. I'm just trying to understand, because I am not an expert on school funding by any stretch of the imagination. I'm trying to understand, you're changing what now would be required for referendum, and you're giving up to $300 authorization to the school board to levy that without having to ask for the voter approval.
Yes.
And that would change the impact for many school districts across the state who can't now get a levy passed and would give them the ability to equalize what they can raise from the community by giving this $300. I'm just trying to understand in a layman's terms.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator. Yes, that's absolutely right. I'm actually tracked pretty closely with the work that the Governor's Task Force on Education Funding recommended.
That could be the right policy.
Their recommendation was to use market value for a mechanism here. Their recommendation was to do this $300. Now they have a further recommendation. They propose to do another $200 for location levy for Greater Minnesota regional centers, and then another $400 for location levy for metropolitan areas. I have not included any of that.
Senator Skoy, you said there are 47 districts with no levy right now?
Mr. Chair and members, I believe, I know it's in the 40s. It's kind of hard to get an exact number because some school districts had referendums that failed, so they will be going off next year. And I don't have an exact count on those, but it's in the 40s.
And then there may be a handful of others that have less than 300 right now, and they would also have the ability to bump up.
And
but above
Chair,
that, there wouldn't be any. I mean, if one has 700 or 2,000, it's just a shift of what it's counted under.
And, Mr. Chair and members, there is an oddity in the education funding mechanism, whereas if they passed a voter-approved referendum for $1, they actually receive some significant other dollars through an equity revenue index. Now, Governor Dayton and his proposal has fixed that oddity in the education funding by the changes that he's made in equity revenue. Members, if you're interested in this, there's a really good publication that walks through all of the various components of education funding, and if anybody's interested, I can get you, contact my office, and I'll get you a copy of it. It's not a hard read. It's done by staff, nonpartisan staff in the legislature. But it's really good, and it's really helpful when you're looking at it. When I started the session, I decided I was going to get my arms around the school funding formula. So I printed out the spreadsheet that had the school funding formula on it, and it was a scroll. It's 70 columns wide. And took four sheets of paper tape together to get the whole thing on one thing, rolled it up and carried it around for a few days. It's something that, while I'm not necessarily always supportive of simplification, just to simplify, connections can occur. But when this is a pretty long and drawn out moving stuff, I think it's good that we start looking at the people.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Skoy, you're so right about that education funding formula being so complicated and so complex, all those 70 fields, which is, and you, your comments were kind of directed to this earlier, and I just want to clarify. So if this bill were to pass in its current form, thinking about all these interrelated funding mechanisms for education, how would this bill impact any of those remaining 69 funding mechanisms? And I think you mentioned the equalization levy, state levy. How would this, in other words, is there a fiscal note attached to this in any way, and what is it?
Senator Skoy.
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, the levy in and of itself, I don't believe has a fiscal note. The equalizing has the fiscal note, and it's around $110 million. To be honest, as I said in my opening comments, we really didn't look at the distribution of the of these dollars much. We kind of focused in on the policy. We tracked along with what the governor's task force had addressed. We were trying to recognize the policy issues around these schools that have a difficult time. And then we focused in on the policy discussion about equalizing tax burden, kind of trying to figure out a way to equalize the burden across the state and then lower it for everyone. That's been our policy discussion. I kind of think the K-12 folks should look at the impact on school funding and see if they think that what I'm proposing is being distributed fairly. But there's about $110 million cost.
Thank you.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Skoy. I know this is very difficult to do, and so I commend all your efforts. I just want to ask you from a suburban school district point of view, and not particularly one of mine, but from any kind of suburban point of view, you're going to shift some of the referendum, or excuse me, the levy, to school board approved, and you're going to have a freeze on the ability to raise back in voter approval by a year. And I'm wondering why a year? Can we? Because they have the ability, we know this because of their market value and the general voting habits in those communities, that they will come back and they will just increase property taxes again and again to offset that $300. And it might not take more than a year if the freeze is just 1 year. And so I'm wondering why a year.
Mr. Chair and Senator Ortman, you're absolutely right. In the end of the day on this, I'd like to think that these property tax reliefs would have at least 1 year to go into effect. If they go into effect and then the community and the community members decide that they want to put those tax dollars back into the school, they would have the opportunity to do it. But I'd like to go in effect for 1 year.
Senator Skoy.
Mr. Chair and Senator Ortman, I've never been a big fan of putting restrictions on elected local bodies to do what they think is best for their community. In this one case, I think putting a one-year freeze in place to let the impacts go into effect, people are going to have that year to analyze that, and then they can move forward again. I just think that makes some sense.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ortman.
But doesn't that just move the inequality down the road? Because then if those suburban school districts can just come right back and levy on top through a referendum, now we're unequal again. And I'm just wondering, are we just pushing this down the road a little to find some temporary equalization?
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Ortman, I have had a number of thoughts and discussions about whether I should be lowering the authorized cap to track with what I'm doing, but I decided not to do that. If you're interested in doing that, I would certainly consider that as an area that we could contemplate which would address that issue. The one thing that I'm hoping that happens out of this is that some of these communities, as we go through this session and do what we're going to do for property tax reductions and relief, that some of these school districts and communities will be able to go out and explain the equalizing mechanism, and maybe there would be more community support, being that they're not so much of the burden falling on the local property tax. As Senator Hoffman said when he was here, currently in order to raise money in some of these communities, the per home impact is significant, and that's part of the reason they can't pass their referendum. So if we are able to reduce that burden through equalizing, maybe all of this will be more equal and it won't be quite so much disparity.
Senator Chamberlain.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Scoy, I obviously agree with the concept and what we're trying to do here, but I had to follow up with Senator Ortman and Senator Nelson's concerns. I think I get a couple things to clarify. So your amendment, Senator Hoffman's bill had the inflator in there. I don't think the amendment carries that. That's first, and if that's correct. Secondly, I'm concerned about the net tax capacity factor for the advancement revenue. Am I correct that the advancement revenue would pretty much be based on the tax capacity? That's second.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
Senator Chamberlain, the tax capacity component has been removed. It's on market value.
Okay, thank you, Senator Scoy. And so we have that out. That's gone. And then the inflator's gone. I think my concern is same as Senator Ortman and some others. We're combining two things here, removing the voters' ability to vote on that part of the referendum. I understand what you're trying to do, but that I certainly agree with the equalization, but this incremental move to remove the voters' right to vote in their referendum, that and I think that's a big concern for me and for a lot of voters. And I think that would have an impact in some of these other districts, as Senator Ortman pointed out, that we'll just, without the inflator and with these wealthy districts, we'll be able to continue to do those things. So to sum up, I do have a concern about mixing the referenda piece with the equalization piece. I agree with the concept, and I'm concerned that the inflator is not in there to fix it going forward. And I don't know if this fully fixes the problem going around down the road, but thank you for your efforts.
Well, Mr. Chair, let me address the inflator. You know, many times I've carried provisions that have had automatic inflation adjustment in it, and I generally get accused of putting government on autopilot. And so I kind of pulled that out of this bill to try to mute that part of the discussion, understanding that this, if that had been in place since 1992, this bill would not be necessary because the number would be higher than what it is in my bill. But I'm hopeful that future legislators will spend the time and effort to understand this as I have and will again increase the number to make up for the increase in property value. So, you know, if somebody wants to put an inflator in this at some point through the process, I'd very likely look favorably upon that. But I wasn't prepared to deal with the point of the discussion about government on autopilot. I really wanted to focus in on the discussion of the equalizing. Now, the reason that I do what I'm doing with regard to the levy, I would never have done just a school board approval on the voter-approved referendum, because that would freeze in place the current inequities that we have. A school district that doesn't have a voter-approved referendum wouldn't get anything, and those that had $2,600 could renew with just school board approval. So I would have never done that. The reason to go to the school board approval is to figure out a mechanism so that the school districts that struggle so hard to pass these or are underfunded with theirs can get at least to $300, which is less than 30% of the average in the state. I mean, think, the average is $1,030. We're talking about less than 30% of that school board approval. It's probably not as much levy authority as they currently have on the number of levies that they currently can authorize with school board approval. So it's a pretty modest effort, I think, but I want the legislature to have this discussion about bringing some equity through. I mean, it could be the redo of the equity formula. It could be any number of mechanisms, but we need to start talking about this disparity that we have between school districts and the funding, because kids in Minnesota, depending upon where they happen to live, are receiving very different educational opportunities.
Further discussion? Senator Nelson.
Mr. Chair, one more question, Senator Scoia, and maybe this was already discussed, and but I think I'm trying to get my arms around, I think, the formula, and I'm looking at lines 3.26 through 3.31, what that new referendum revenue allowance equals. So, you know, the product of the ratio of the resident marginal cost pupil units the district would have counted to the district's resident marginal cost pupil units. And then I'm just wondering, can you, and then it was times the initial referendum allowance. Can somebody explain kind of what this formula is? Or can you explain what this is?
Mr. Chair and Senator Nelson, I'm going to have staff help on this. The number that is of importance for this bill is on the first page. It's on line 1.27. It's $868,513. That number currently is 476, I think, $1,000. What that is you take the total market value in a school district and divide it by the number of pupils in the school district. And if the number is below, and I might not have the exact number, I think it's 476,000, 494, one of the two. Anyway, if you take the total market value of the school district, and they got 1,000 kids in that school, and you divide the 1,000 into the market value, and if the number is below $476,000, that part, large or small, is what the state helps, because they assess the burden based on the market value divided by the kids. So when you take the 474 and you move it to 868,000, that increases the amount that the state would pay. That's the formula that's being utilized for determining the equalization. This stuff in the back, to be honest, it's part of the legislative boilerplate that goes on around here when you're drafting statutes to make sure that they conform with everything else and conform with other mechanisms and formula. The key to what I'm doing is on line 127, and I've doubled the 474 to be 868, and it's not an exact doubling because there were some other factors that played into that. But basically, that's what's going on.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I understand that the concept that and what you've said here, but as we talked earlier, it's all these different moving parts in the education formula that have really created, not just in levy inequities, but in all kinds of education funding inequities amongst our school districts. And so and maybe this isn't the place in this committee, maybe it will be in the education committee, but I think we need to see how this particular formula, the ratio of these particular functions, and then times another a function. I think we need to see how that translates into each district to get a better handle of how this is going to impact our schools.
Mr. Chair and Senator Nelson, you know, I think this referendum allowance part, this is where we're taking the $300 out of the voter-approved referendum and replacing it with this other mechanism. This is the functions that are being utilized to make sure that we don't have other impacts, I believe. But I don't see Bjorn here now. Senate
Until they're in the
K-12
committee.
Maybe Ms. McQuaid can help us.
Mr. Chair, and, committee, the paragraph C there is just a repeat of paragraph B, which is, as Senator Skoy mentioned, a the referendum allowance. And if you look online, 3.34, that's the subtraction of the $300 that was rolled onto the education advancement levy. And as for the additional allowance allowed between May 30th, 2003 and, between April 30th, 2001 and May 30th, 2003, that was something that was put in place by the Education Committee. I wasn't here. I'm trying to channel Dr. Melter here. It was probably a look back to hold some districts harmless for the change that happened in 2001.
So one final question, Mr.
Senator Nelson.
So do we have runs of how this is going to affect different school districts?
Mr. Chair and Senator Nelson, I did talk about that. I don't know that there is a run on this exact bill. We really haven't focused a lot on the distribution. We kind of were trying to have a policy discussion about this. I tried to focus in on the tax issue statewide. I'm going to let the K-12 committee work on the distribution. I think it's more appropriate for them to do that as they are the education funding committee, and they can make sure that this funds all the schools across the state somewhat comparable. And if they need to make changes, hopefully they'll be in touch with us, the tax committee, and this will be coming back through the committee at some point as the K-12 bill comes here. So I'm going to let them work on that.
Further discussion? If not, Senator Skoy moves Senate File 177 as amended be recommended pass and referred to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, did we adopt the A4?
Yes, we.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
No, we didn't.
Oh, I don't believe we did.
Good point.
We did?
Yeah, we did.
Okay. Yes, Yes, we did. thanks for checking. Senate File 177 as amended be recommended pass and referred to the Committee on K-12 Finance. Further discussion on that motion? Not all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. And with that, the.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and we're done for the day.
That the meeting's adjourned.
Chair, I'm sorry.